All right, let's be real. What has been the hardest thing about your pregnancy and postpartum journey? Is it the postpartum painful sex that nobody talks about? What are you supposed to do with that? Is it the fact that you might have torn during delivery and you have no idea how to heal now that you're in postpartum? Welcome to the Onas podcast, where we bring on mothers, parents, and pregnant postpartum individuals to talk about their journey and their experiences to give that knowledge back to people that need it. And we are also attached to theonascollaborative.com, which is a free online educational directory where we help moms and parents connect to maternity care providers in their local area. We are here to give the power back to you guys so you have a choice in your journey. We'll have space for midwives, doulas, pelvic floor PTs, massage therapist. And as we continue expanding, we hope that we can support you. All right, we hope you enjoy this podcast. Welcome back to the Onas podcast. My name is Erin and I am the host whilst also being the founder of the Onas Collaborative. This week we have another exciting episode with one of our providers. She is a doula out of Seattle and her name is Talia. Today she is going to be talking to us about her work and what she does, why she got into becoming a doula, and how she advocates for other women and birthing individuals in pregnancy and postpartum care. We even have her come on and talk about her experience with postpartum depression, such as postpartum rage, and what that looked like and how she got support to help her cope with that. And she is parenting during COVID, so we appreciate her for her time and coming on. So we hope you all enjoy this episode.
Yes.
All right, welcome on, Talia. I wanted to start it off by, Also, if you stutter or anything, totally fine, because it's recorded and I can edit it out. That's why I love podcasts.
Perfect.
Yeah. How about you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Okay. Well, thanks for having me, first off. I'm so hyped to be here. I'm based out of close to Seattle, Washington, almost 29. I'm an Aries, if that tells you anything. I have an almost 5-year-old daughter. She'll be 5 at the end of this month, and then an 8-month-old son. So I'm 8 months postpartum. I studied Arabic and international studies in college. That's what my degree's in. So I have a huge love and passion for other cultures, people, languages, really just everything when it comes to that. Like, I just am so obsessed with it. I got into birth work really after, so I got pregnant in 2015, right after I graduated from college. And my now husband, we weren't married then. We had actually only been together for like a month and a half when we got pregnant with with our daughter. So I had just turned 23. I knew nothing, absolutely nothing about pregnancy, birth, let alone being a mother, right? Mm-hmm. So we really were just kind of going, we hit the ground running trying to figure out how to, A, be an adult, and then also, you know, how to prepare for, you know, creating and welcoming life into this world and thereafter. And it wasn't until I experienced all that that I realized, I'm like, holy buckets, we do not take care of our birthing people and their families, like not even a little. And I say that coming from having a fairly positive experience. I really did have a positive birth experience with my daughter. But it was still the postpartum period. I felt like I had just kind of been dropped at the curb. And I knew that if I felt that way, how many other people were experiencing this all the time? And we never talk about it, right? We never talk about it. And while I don't want to be a negative person, we don't talk about the actual realities of trying to conceive, reproduction altogether, pregnancy, birth, and then postpartum. And I mean, I feel like it's always structured, this narrative surrounding pregnancy is it's this beautiful thing, which it totally is. Don't get me wrong. It's a miracle and I love it, but we're almost vilified if we talk about the nasty stuff that goes along with it. And like, hey, if we hate it, we hate it. But we're vilified for that. Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of like the introduction to birth work for me was my own experience. And knowing that we just you needed we needed people to have an advocate, someone in their corner. And that's really what shaped my wanting to jump into not just like being obsessed with it and reading about it and learning about it, but educating others and being that advocate for them. Because essentially, in my mind, what a doula is, what a birth worker is, however you call them, you're an advocate for that person. You're like that one person, that primary person that they can count on.
Yeah, no, I love that. And for your first, so this was after the birth of your daughter that you realized something you wanted to do. Did you feel like you knew everything and had the right amount of support during pregnancy and birth, and then it was postpartum where things were lacking, or was it through the entire process?
I would say definitely more so during the birth and postpartum. Like pregnancy, I thought, so I'm a type A and I like to have, yeah, every, and an Aries. So I was like, reading every book. We watched, I can't even, probably every birth video there is on YouTube. I felt as prepared as possible as I could be. Excuse me, not realizing like how really unprepared I was. I had prepared for baby, but I didn't prepare for myself. I didn't prepare for what was at the transformation that was going to happen within myself, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. I didn't prepare for how the dynamic between my husband and I was going to change, and how he was going to be impacted and affected. Because hello, our partners, whoever they may be, are also going through the experience as well, and that they carry that as well. And they change. So there were just so many things that nobody talked about, right? So really, yeah, it was the pregnancy. I felt like I had it under control, and it was really the birth and just postpartum that I was like, whoa, what is happening right now? And then I nursed my daughter, and then I nursed my son. So lactation, oh my gosh, that nobody talked about that. It was, an appointment at with my OB. Hey, are you planning on nursing, or do you plan on formula feeding? And if you say nursing, okay, cool, we'll get you a pump, and that's that. That is literally that. And that's a no-go for me. Like that's you're setting people up for failure. So that is another, that's a huge emphasis area that I am like, I want people to feel supported with however they choose to feed their baby, but specifically if they choose to use their bodies to feed, making sure that they are set up as best as possible for before baby even gets here to, have the education and the resources to successfully do it, because it is hard. It's hard.
Yeah. And we know that people of color are already given less support when it comes to deciding whether or not they want to breastfeed or bottle feed. I know for
Absolutely.
my sister, like late for her second birth, she kind of knew more options, but her first one, she was like, they didn't even give me an option. They just handed me some formula and a bottle, and they're like, here you go, good luck. And it's just insane to me that they're not given more support. So for you, did you know what a lactation consultant or a lactation specialist was?
Oh, heck no. I had no idea. So, like I said, I'm the oldest of five, and my mom nursed all five of us. So just growing up, I just, watching her and just listening to her, I just was like, well, that's obviously what I'm going to do. Like, that's just what you do, right? I'd actually never seen anybody, I none of any of my siblings take a bottle that I remember. And I just, nursing just seemed like the thing that I was going to do. And it wasn't until so my daughter, we had, man, we had so many issues feeding. She did not, she only latched onto one side. I didn't know that latching was even an issue. I thought baby's gonna be born, they're gonna put her on my chest, and we're just gonna know what to do. And that is not how that works. So there's a learning curve for both you and baby. And so yeah, she didn't latch onto the left side. I didn't know that I needed to keep trying with her. So essentially for 22 months, she only nursed on one side. So it wasn't until after that that I even found out what a lactation consultant was, because I was very fortunate, and there was The hospital that I gave birth in had free lactation consultants, so I could go in whenever. And she had issues with her tummy as well. She had really bad colic, so I ended up changing my like completely changing my diet to only like getting rid of dairy and egg products. I had mastitis like 6 times. It was like just craziness, like all the things that can happen happened, and I didn't know what my resources were until I was in that moment. So that's another thing that, like I said, making sure that people know what the resources are, what their options are beforehand, so they're not like in that moment how I was, freaking out, so stressed, not knowing what to do. You're always wondering if your baby's getting enough food, if they're, all of those things. So
And now that you've had your son, what has that experience been like? Was there a massive difference between the providers you chose and what you had access to?
oh, absolutely, yes. So there is a 4-year difference between my daughter and my son, and in that 4 years, I grew, my growth expanded with all of the knowledge that I was interested in with birth and all of that. So I, with my daughter, I didn't know that I could ask. I knew that I could ask questions, but I didn't know that I could say no. I didn't know about informed consent. And fast forward to when I had my son, or when I got pregnant with my son, I knew about this. I was educated in it, and I felt the confidence to be able to ask for things, say no to things, and pretty much kind of set the tone for what I wanted, because it was my body, it was my baby, it was my experience. So yeah, I was the process and the support that I got was, I'd say, a little bit better. Or I felt a little bit more in control, I should say, until the end when the pandemic started. So I was 7 months pregnant with my son when COVID happened and everything shut down, and that's kind of when things got kind of it just got crazy. So
Just super overwhelming, especially with COVID. That's changed the narrative for so many parents.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think you're gonna, I love that you said people don't realize they can say no. Because in reality, your healthcare professional works for you. You don't work for
Absolutely.
them.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Super important. So I would love for you to talk about what you do as a doula, because I know every doula kind of has their different specialization and where they want to focus. But what does that look like for you, and how do you support pregnant postpartum individuals?
So, kind of how I said earlier, like I set the tone for myself. That's really what I want for my clients. I don't ever want them to feel that like I'm trying to direct them or make them direct them in their story and their journey. So I really want them to set the tone with how they want things to go. And I'm kind of like a I'm a support character. I'm not even a support character. I'm like a backstage hand, they're the main characters. And so I try really hard to set to like be transparent about that right off the bat. But I really feel like I really am just an advocate. And by that I mean I give them whatever education they want. I let them know what I am, I don't want to say specialized in, but like what I have experience in and what I don't. And so for example, like lactation is really important to me, and I let them know like before, yeah, we have our prenatal appointments, but before we even like get close to like we're planning on birth, we're talking about how you want to feed your baby. And we're planning that. Like I have a whole like how you have birth plans? I have, or birth preference sheet, however you say. I have infant feeding plans, and we go over that. And so they can plan and be as prepared as possible, because that, again, that's really important. I also go over postpartum. Postpartum is very important to me, and from my own experience, but also from just the fact that we don't take care of our postpartum people and their families at all. So I kind of go over, what you can expect, but really emphasize that everybody's so different. The rhythm is so different for everybody. But here are things that, I think that you should be on the alert for. And I'm not even talking about like postpartum mood disorders, but just, sleep deprivation. That's crazy. Cluster feeding. We don't like A lot of people have no idea what cluster feeding even is, and they think something's wrong. So stuff like that, all like kind of the nasty, dirty, crazy stuff that nobody wants to talk about. That's kind of what I do.
Sorry. Do you
I'm
want to
sorry.
briefly talk about cluster feeding? Because there might be a lot of people that listen to this that have no idea.
Oh yeah. So cluster feed. Within like the first couple days of life, and every baby's different, so if it doesn't happen right away, then that's fine. But I'd say within that first week, you're gonna see your baby, instead of going every maybe 2 to 3 hours of eating, wanting to eat every 45 minutes, every 30 minutes. Literally, it feels like your baby is just attached to you. And what is happening is it's actually really amazing, even though it is really tough sometimes. What's happening is your baby and your body are working together. Your baby is Every time your baby is on the breast or the chest, they are stimulating that milk flow and your supply. So it's your baby saying, "Hey, produce more milk." And that's when a lot of people will start to see their mature milk come in. So move from colostrum to mature milk. So it's really amazing. And it will also help, especially that first week, your uterus to contract back down. Because when your baby, when you nurse, oxytocin is released. And as we know, oxytocin is the hormone that produces contractions, and it's contracting back down. So your body is continuously working with your baby. It's this amazing process. Might not feel amazing. Those afterbirth contractions really do suck, but it is amazing. And the cluster feeding is something that does help with all of that. There's a rhyme and reason, but I know for me, when the cluster feeding happened with my daughter, and even with my son a little bit, I was, you can't help but be a little on edge or a little like, something wrong. Why are they constantly eating? Do they need me? And they might be really fussy. And you're constantly just worried, like, are they getting enough? Are they actually getting anything? So, but yeah, nobody talked to me about cluster feeding beforehand. Even as I left the hospital, no one talked to me about it. So I
No,
was really stressed.
I had never heard of it until now, so thanks for explaining it to me. The other thing I wanted to ask you briefly said postpartum contractions. What
So
did that have to do also with the breastfeeding and the
yeah, so they will, after you've had a baby, and this goes for regardless of how you've had your baby, whether it was vaginally or by cesarean, regardless, your uterus expanded, right, to house your baby and to grow your baby. So it has to go back down. And just the way it pushed, expelled your baby and birthed your baby, it has to go back down that way with contractions. So it's actually contracting back down, and you do have contractions. Yeah, I know. And they don't tell you about that either. So I remember, man, I remember after having my daughter, and I was in the hospital, and the nurse came in and was like, "I'm going to give you a little massage." And I'm thinking, "That's awesome. Thank you so much." And she's like, rubbing my belly. She's like, "This might feel a little uncomfortable." And I'm like, "What do you mean? It's a massage." They press on your abdomen where your uterus is. And listen, it's not a nice massage. It's not a good feeling massage, but that helps. It helps move the blood around, and it also helps your uterus contract back down. So what I was saying earlier about oxytocin is the hormone that creates these contractions with your uterus, and oxytocin is also the hormone that is released while you're nursing. So this beautiful cycle is happening where your baby is signaling the release of oxytocin, and that is helping your uterus go back to where it needs to go down, because it does need to contract back down. There can be complications if it doesn't.
Wow, very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's just
And
it's
nobody
I'm
talks about
telling you. Yeah, ex exactly. But our bodies truly are magical, and they do work with our babies, so it's pretty cool.
And I know for you, and this is something I'm also super passionate about, I would say most doulas and birth keepers are, is informed consent. So I would love for you to talk about this. It's so important. So go on.
I could talk about this for days, because it is so important. And I talk with so many people, regardless of gender, about not realizing, not even with birth, but just in general, not realizing that when they go in to see a healthcare professional, they need to be asked permission to be touched or examined, or to go ahead with a test or whatever. And we have put healthcare professionals, I feel like, on this pedestal as a, in a society, like untouchable. And I want to preface this by saying I have had really good experiences with healthcare professionals who have given me informed consent, and it's been amazing, but it's not very many. So but it's I just want to say that I know it's not everybody out there, but yeah, we put them on this pedestal where they're untouchable, and they can we kind of just like, you guys are the experts, you do whatever you got to do, and we're just going to be here and we're going to let you go through it regardless of if I've given you consent. I try and tell people, friends, clients, and whomever really will listen, but you know, if you're going in for a cervical check or just like your yearly whatever, you know, when you hear that, the classical, okay, you're going to feel this now, you're going to feel my fingers, you might feel this pressure, blah blah blah, that is not consent, that is not asking permission. That's not trauma-informed care. So those are things, and it might seem so little, and it might seem so trivial, but it is such a big deal. And you do, we do, as patients and as just humans, deserve, like, it is our right to have informed consent. And that goes, like I said, from as small as just a regular checkup to you know, having a baby, and or you know, being induced. You have every right to say, no, I'm not going to be induced. You have every right to say, no, I don't want a C-section, or I don't want an IV in my arm. You know, all of these kind of things. And my own experience with informed consent in the birthing world, I have an experience with that, and I didn't even realize that it what I was not having informed consent until years later. And I was thinking back on it with my daughter. I came into the hospital and we got admitted. I was in labor, and we'd only been there for a couple hours, and things were progressing really well. I felt really good. I was managing everything. And the doctor came in and she said verbatim, you know, we're just going to break your waters to speed things up. And I was 23 at the time. I was in labor. My husband and I were kind of like, you know, we had no idea. Like, nothing was explained to us. Like, this is how we're going to do it. First off, it wasn't asked. It was, we're going to do this to speed things up. There was no reasoning behind why you wanted to speed things up. Everything was fine. Me and baby were fine. So it was really just like for their benefit to speed things up. And so you know, I didn't feel like I could say no. So I got on the bed, and they did it. And it was, as soon as they broke my water, it was like this instantaneous, crazy amount of like pain that I hadn't experienced. I had a true not true, but I had a very big contraction. And from that moment on, I was on my back, not really understanding what was happening. Things really got out of control. And looking back on that experience, it, you know, if they would have done informed consent with me and asked me, hey, would you want to have your waters, your membranes broken, excuse me, your waters broken or ruptured, to speed things along. This is why we want to speed things along, blah, blah, blah. All these kind of things, you know, here's take 5 or 10 minutes, you can think about it. And but that's not what happened. And so many times I have seen that not be the case. And that again, that's kind of my role. When I say I'm an advocate more than anything, informing my clients, like in these kind of situations or before these situations even happen, like, hey, if something like this happens, you can You can say, hey, hold up. I just want to take 5 minutes to think about this. So yeah, that is something just so important for just like life in general, and something we are teaching our children right now. Even when my daughter goes to her doctor's appointment, her doctor is amazing, and you know, asks her, hey, is it okay if I touch you? To even just, you know, take her to listen to her heart and stuff like that. And that's something that is so important, and I think vital to our future generations, having that be the norm.
Yeah.
So
especially as we continue working with kids, as someone, I've done a lot of anti-human trafficking work in the past, so like a lot of sexual abuse, sexual assault work, and so I think that is so crucial, is starting when they're young, for them to understand like this, because child sexual abuse is so common and so just everywhere, but getting kids to understand from a young age, it's still your body. And like, you're still allowed to have people ask you for permission to touch it no matter what. So I think that's great that the doctor does that.
Yes. I know that pregnancy and birth, no matter how much you prepare or you feel prepared, you can just feel so out of control. So, and like, you don't have any kind of say in anything. And it's all about, it's giving that control and putting that trust back in the birthing person's hands, to trust their body, trust the process, trust themselves to even make decisions for themselves. And that's something that I talk about with clients, because I want to be that reminder that, by the way, you do have this autonomy over yourself and your decisions and your body, your baby, your birth.
Yeah. And I think the hardest part is getting that education out there. And I think that's why your work is so important, because like you said, for you and your partner, you were both sitting there like, what does this mean? But I guess we don't ask, but we just do it. And that's where your work is so handy, because you can sit there and explain it and say, well, does this person really need that? Do you understand what this means? Do you consent? And I think
just being like an extra, I guess, set of eyes and ears.
Yeah.
And that's really, because there are some times where, you know, they don't need me. Like, they need me, but they don't need me to say anything. They don't need me. They might not even need me to you know, touch them or help them in that kind of way. They, you know, I'm really just like an extra if they need me sometimes. But sometimes I am more hands on or more verbal. It depends on the client, depends on the energy, and just, on the dynamic too. So you really have to be like versatile.
And have you mainly had clients who are birthing mainly with OBGYNs or midwives, or has it been a mix?
So because I'd say it's a mix. It's been, my last was an OB, but that was just like super rushed. We showed up to the hospital, to the birthing center, at 9 centimeters dilated. So it was really whoever was there at that point. It was awesome. It was amazing. she was so amazing. The birthing person was so amazing. But yeah, I'd say it's a mix. A lot of the people that I help and I care for are active duty, or our spouses to active duty, just because of the area that I live in. So not a lot of them are doing home birth. Most of them are at the hospital, some are at birth centers, but I'd say the majority are either OBs or midwives. So
yeah. And one of the other questions, let me check. Okay, we're plenty of time. I'm trying to think. Let me hold on. I had another question. I just forgot it.
No, you're good.
Oh, okay. So what is your main way of supporting people postpartum? We know that postpartum is this long array of mental emotions, physical, especially like, how do you take care of your vagina postpartum? Nobody talks about that. Yeah. I actually had a mom on the podcast who I think you'd actually get on really, really well with. She's from California. She was like, I decided not to breastfeed because, one, you're just had a baby, you're trying to heal your vagina. And she's like, all of that and trying to, on top of trying to breastfeed was just too much. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. And so how do you typically, what is your way of helping people postpartum usually look like?
So just as like every person, every family dynamic, every partnership is so different. It does vary. The postpartum period is it's a very sacred time, regardless of if you're spiritual or religious or not. It is just a sacred time of healing and recovery. And people, the birthing people and their partners or whoever they have there, really need to find their own rhythm. And that can look so differently, right? Especially if if you have a spouse or a partner, if you don't, if you already have kids, depending on just everything, are you going back to work right away? So it can look like for example, right now I'm providing care to one of my clients, and I come over, I cook and clean for her, I do the laundry. I have helped her try, she was very engorged, so I physically helped her with that, trying to massage, and we use the haka, all these kind of different things. I use, excuse me, I show how to set up pumps, regardless of if they decide they want to, formula or bottie feed, however they go. But the pump can be kind of daunting sometimes, so and overwhelming. So I usually help show how to do that. But yeah, so like housekeeping, that kind of stuff, if they want, it's really up to them. I tell them that I'm here for them, however that may look. I also, like my friend, not my friend, excuse me, my client that I'm helping right now, she has a dog, this beautiful dog. So I've been helping by, I take the dog for walks, and I take do all that kind of stuff. I have, like I said, I think I mentioned earlier, I have a whole compilation of resources of lactation services, however that may look, and postpartum like support groups in the area, different therapy, all that kind of stuff for maybe postpartum mood disorders, all that. I have a resource list too. So sometimes I go to the appointments, the postpartum appointments with them, depending on if they want me to or if they have a spouse or whoever that doesn't want to go. But I think like one of the most essential parts of my care is I'm really just like an ear for them. Like I'm a shoulder for them to lean on. Because half the time we're in the trenches, right? We're in the trenches of this, and we don't know what's going on. So part of like what I offer is like you can reach out to me 24/7 if you have any kind of issues. And so I want to, like, honestly, half the time I'm providing service just through like text and calls and like FaceTime. Like, hey, I don't know if my baby's latching all right or if this looks all right. And I'll be like, you want to FaceTime? Please. Yeah. And so we FaceTime and do that way. So, or if they're just like, I don't feel like myself, that doesn't mean I want to go get help. I just don't know what to do. And I listen to them. Like sometimes we just need someone to listen to and who's been there and who's experienced it,
Yeah. No, I
So.
think that's really important to talk about as well, because I think when you said earlier, we don't really take care of our postpartum people. We just don't. And I think also because of Instagram and seeing the pictures of the cute baby room and everything, like all of that is super great, but that's not the 100% reality of postpartum. You don't realize all the different, like something as easy as making meals. That is something that a lot of doulas help with, because you don't realize after you come home, the last thing you want to think about is getting groceries and making a meal.
Yes. Oh my gosh. No, that's the last thing you want to do. Or cleaning. I don't want to unload the dishwasher. I don't want to do that. And in a lot of cultures, the birthing people like will move in with like their families, or their families will come in, and they're like, there's like this 40 day, it's I want to say it's in a lot of Asian cultures, there's like this 40, 60 day period of rest where the birthing person is not allowed to do anything. Like they are literally just resting and bonding with their baby. And honestly, I wish that was the norm. I really do. I say that, but I personally didn't do that. Like I didn't rest, and I'm kind of a hypocrite. I will tell you to rest, but I understand if you're just not one of those people who can.
But also, you
So.
can't blame yourself for that, because our culture also doesn't
Exactly.
praise rest. I mean, we don't even have a federal maternity
No,
leave.
and that's another thing where it depends on the person. It depends on like just the family dynamic. Like, for example, when my son was born, we had a daughter. Like, I couldn't just rest. Like, I had to take care of my family, right? And but then there's this guilt of like, oh man, self-care, like I'm supposed to be resting. I know this. I know I'm supposed to be caring for myself. And I feel like it's this vicious cycle of like self-care is just and rest, especially in the postpartum period, has been like just another thing you need to add on your checklist. Like, did I check off my self-care today? And that can be a super vicious thing, a super vicious cycle of guilt. And we already are guilting ourselves as people who people of color, women of color, mothers, parents. Like, it's yeah, we don't need to add another checklist thing for guilt.
No, you're completely right. And one of the last questions I wanted to ask you that I meant to ask earlier is how are you doing postpartum in COVID?
How, like, personally, how
Yeah,
am
you.
I?
How are you?
Oh, thank you for asking. Seriously, thank you. That's so sweet of you to ask. Oof, it's crazy. It's crazy. I feel like we have kind of found our rhythm right now, but it comes in waves, right? Like, it's and just being parents in general and having a family in general, like, I feel like you can't get too comfortable with whatever schedule or rhythm you're on because anything can happen. But right now I feel really good. So I actually have postpartum depression and anxiety, and I did with my daughter. Didn't really realize it. I just kind of white knuckled it through because I thought that's what I had to do, and I didn't feel like there was any other option. This time around though, I knew like I have options, and I'm not going to be silent about this. And I'm very, very fortunate that my partner, my husband, is so supportive and very aware, also aware of everything when it comes to postpartum. And we're a really good team when it comes to that. So he was so supportive,
That's good.
and has been. So that's also key, having that support, whether it's a partner or a doula or whoever, you know. So it is, I feel like it's a day by day thing, but I don't know. Like, I am trying to just live in the moment of, I'm 8 months postpartum myself. And I actually had a friend who just reached out to me the other day and was like, hey, Tal, you do realize that you are also 8 months postpartum. Like, you just had a baby too. It's okay that, because I'm running around doing a thousand things and I don't even realize it because that's just who I am. And, I'm trying to, take care of other people, and I'm have my active duty military stuff that I do, and trying to raise a family. And I sometimes do forget that I did just have a baby as well, so I need to, like, it's okay to slow down. So
Absolutely.
but yeah, that's it's been the beginning of my postpartum was definitely rough. I had a lot of like symptoms of the depression and anxiety, but I reached out. I've been in therapy. I have a really good support system, and it's a journey. Like, you don't just wake up one day and you're like, oh, I'm better. I'm okay now. It's a journey. So, yeah. Thank you
No.
for asking.
Yeah, of course. And so you believe that you also had postpartum depression after the birth of your first one.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And then
Yeah, and
sorry.
no, you're good. Ask
Did
me.
that lead into your second pregnancy? Now that you were a doula with your second pregnancy, is that something that you were constantly watching for, or is that something that you just noticed hit after?
Yeah, so I was constantly I actually brought it up to my midwife, our first appointment. I was like, listen, I had postpartum depression last time. I'm really nervous about, this time around, if I'll have it again. Excuse me. So I was communicating that, and my husband and I was constantly communicating it with him, just being like, hey, I need you. If you see me and I don't see myself, right, acting in a certain way, or if I'm not okay, I need you to do the tough love. I need you to have those conversations with me. And of course he did, and it was amazing. Like, there were time 2 weeks after I had my son and I'm like, I'm not okay, and he's like, I know you're not. He's like, I have numbers, let's call them.
That's good.
So yeah. But yeah, it was definitely something on my radar and I was constantly aware of, especially when COVID happened and I was 7 months pregnant and everything closed down. My daughter's daycare closed. I wasn't going to work anymore, so I was staying at home. It was just this crazy scenario, and definitely the mental health, not just for me, but I know for everyone, it when we were all thrown, we were really thrown to the wolves there. And we still are. So yeah, I was very much very hyper aware of how I was feeling and where I felt like I was going. So
And I wanted to ask you, if you don't mind sharing, you can tell me now. What were some of your symptoms of postpartum depression? Because there might be moms and parents
Oh
listening
yeah.
that have no idea what they're looking for.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I mean it is different for everybody. And so postpartum mood disorders can look, it can be more than just depression, anxiety, rage. So I actually experienced the rage part. I had, which was it was just so strange for me because I'd never really experienced that before, but I was just so angry and I would get so upset and really like a timer just went off at the littlest thing, like the smallest thing would happen. And I would just lose it, like, just be so angry. And I also didn't realize that anger was a form of like a symptom of depression as well. I had no idea. So it wasn't until I was in therapy that my therapist was like, "Yeah, that's a, you know." And I was like, "Oh, okay." That explains a lot. So I had the rage, and anger. I also, the sadness, the overwhelm, sadness, and then anxiety. So, some people will experience certain like hyper vigilance and like with their baby, or they will kind of think of some. I'm trying to think of the word right off the top of my head, and I cannot for the life of me. But where you're constantly you're kind of imagining something bad happening to either you or your baby, and like really scared about that. That was happening to me. Like I, for example, we have these concrete steps leading up to our house, and I just would imagine me carrying my baby in his carrier and falling on those steps. And I don't know why. I don't know why. So there, yeah, there's that. I'm trying to think. Those were like the really big ones. Also, like the inability, I was having insomnia, which I know sounds crazy because you know you're a new parent and you're barely getting any sleep. So how are you not sleeping when you can? But I would have such a horrible time falling asleep and staying asleep. So, and then of course there's other symptoms where like eating, you might notice like a change in how you're eating. I noticed that I would like be eating a lot. And not like good food, like at all, like eating a ton, and then I would just not eat at all, and so change in diet that way. But those were specific to me. Also, I do have a blog and a post about my specific experience with postpartum on my Instagram page. I have a post about it, and I also blogged about it on my site. So if anybody wants to read about that, I do. It's like the first blog I ever wrote was about my postpartum depression. So yeah, and it, like I said, it can look different for everybody, but yeah.
I think all of those are super important because so many times on Instagram, the postpartum rage is huge. I consistently
Yes.
see that one. And I don't know if a lot of times when I'm seeing it, I don't see it in association with postpartum depression. And I'm wondering if it's because people haven't put them together. Yeah, I think
Yeah,
that's a
I'm
big
not
one.
sure. Another thing that I want to mention is that partners can get postpartum mood disorders as well. And that's not something we talk about. I all like I you asked me earlier about, you know, what do I do specifically as my form of care. I forgot to add that. So if there is a partner in the picture, regardless of who they are, whoever's going to be there essentially during birth and then thereafter, I want to rapport with them, right? And I provide certain care for them and like education for them. And if they are wanting to, I'll do like a one-on-one meeting with them where we kind of just like hash it out. Like, what are you afraid of? What are you excited for? What are you scared of? What do you want to feel? How do you want to feel during this experience? Because more often than not, a lot of partners kind of feel like useless or they don't know what they're doing. And I know my husband felt that way. And so I want to give them tools too. I don't want them to feel that way, especially if this is their baby as well. Like, I want them or their family or whoever it is, like, I want them to feel engaged and as much a part of this as the person giving birth. And I want them to feel seen as well, because more often than not, partners are kind of like pushed to the side, especially postpartum as well. So.
I think that's a great point because we often, which is still good, we still raise awareness that we need to ask the birthing individual how they are, but we rarely ever think to ask the partner. Like I, even in my own experience, looking back now, I don't think there were many times I asked the actual partner how they were doing.
And I mean, I again, that's kind of like how I think society has framed it and the narrative too. However you look at it, whether it was like, well, they don't need to be involved at all, or you know, the only person that matters is the birthing person. And so yeah, however you look at it, that's kind of been the narrative where they just get shoved to the side. And also the whole, you know, they went through that experience as well. So
It's a massive.
my husband's actually going to be writing his experience and his perspective, and he was like, you can share this if you want. So I'm really excited to share it with on my page on Instagram, but also on my blog. He, because I again, we don't really hear from the partner's point of view very often.
Absolutely. And that's what I was going to ask you lastly. Where can people find you and your blog and Instagram other than our directory? Where else can they find you?
I do a lot on Instagram. Like, that's like my main platform. I don't have TikTok. I should though. I feel like I should. Everyone keeps telling me that I should, so I might eventually. But I do most of my stuff and like posts and sharing on Instagram at Indigo Rising Birthwork. But I also have my website that I just went live this last week, and that's where my blog and everything is, where you can find my services and all that fun jazz, which is just www.indigorisingbirthwork.org. So, and that's also on my IG handle too, my website. So, those are really like the two main places that I'm very active in sharing information, and you can get a hold of me.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was an honor to hear your story and hear what you do as a doula and birth worker.
Well, thank you for asking me, and thank you for putting all this information out. Like, it's so important to have people like you who are invested in reproductive justice and just humans in general, you
Thanks.
know.
I appreciate that. And so are you. That's exactly what your work is.
Thank you.
We want to thank Talia again so much for coming on and giving us her time and talking to us about what she does as a birth and postpartum doula. Her work is so incredibly important and she loves working in the BIPOC community. And we also appreciate that she was so honest about postpartum depression and her experience with that because so many postpartum people and moms do go through that and it is an incredibly hard experience. So we want to thank her so much again. And if you are interested in reaching out to Talia, you can find her on our directory under Talia Ross, but you can also find her on Instagram at Indigo Rising Birthwork. And if you are interested in coming on this podcast as a mom or parent to tell your taboo topic, we'd love to have you. You can easily email us at hello@theonuscollaborative.com. And if you are a provider wanting to come on and share your story, you can sign up at our directory to have your own listing, and we'd love to have you. All right, see you all next week. Bye.